translation. Understanding his wife's purpose, he was obliged to perform the forbidden act. And thus, after offering his obeisances unto worshipable fate, he lay with her in a secluded place. Purport. It appears from the talks of Kasyapa with his wife that he was a worshipper of Lord Shiva. And although he knew that Lord Shiva would not be pleased with him for such a forbidden act, he was obliged to act by his wife's desire. And thus he offered his obeisances unto fate. He knew that the child born of such untimely sexual intercourse would certainly not be a good child, but could not protect himself because he was too obliged to his wife. In a similar case, however, when Thakur Haridas was tempted by a public prostitute, at the dead of night, he avoided the allurement because of his perfection in Krishna consciousness. That is the difference between a Krishna conscious person and others. Kasyapa Muni was greatly learned and enlightened, and he knew all the rules and regulations of systematic life. Yet he failed to protect himself from the attack of sex desire. Thakur Haridas was not born of a Brahmana family, nor was he himself Brahmana. Yet he could protect himself from such an attack due to his being Krishna conscious. Thakur Haridas used to chant the holy name of the Lord 300,000 times daily. Translation. Thereafter the Brahmana took his bath in the water and controlled his speech by practicing trance, meditating on the eternal fulgence, and chanting the holy Gayatri hymns within his mouth. Purport. As one has to take bath after using the toilet, so one has to wash himself with water after sexual intercourse, especially when at a forbidden time. Kasyapa Muni meditated on the impersonal Brahma Jyoti by chanting the Gayatri mantra within his mouth. When a Vedic mantra is chanted within the mouth so that only the chanter can hear, the chanting is called japa. But when such mantras are chanted loudly, it is called kirtan. The Vedic hymn, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, can be chanted both softly to oneself or loudly. Therefore, it is called the Maha Mantra, or the Great Hymn. Kasyapa Muni appears to be an impersonalist. Comparing his character with that of Thakur Haridas, as referred to above, it is clear that the personalist is stronger in sense control than the impersonalist. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita as Param Drishtvani Vartate. In other words, one ceases to accept lower grade things when one is situated in a superior condition. One is supposed to be purified after taking bath and chanting Gayatri, but the Maha Mantra is so powerful that one can chant loudly or softly in any condition, and he is protected from all the evils of material existence. So comparison here then is given of the devotees and the impersonalists here. That the devotee is stronger in the, you know, his direction in life, in the control of his senses. The impersonalist, it will be less. One generally thinks of the impersonalists that they are very, you know, rigid in their vows, you know, taking very harsh austerities like this. So then, yes, it's true. It's very strong. They are very respected. They attain to great positions, great powers, great prowess. But the principle is that they are doing it for themselves. An impersonalist means he is working for himself. Even if he is working for others, it's still for himself. Because it's just part of his sadhana. Be nice, be good, be tolerant, be detached. So you deal with everybody else, it's just part of your sadhana. Because the ultimate result is going to come back to yourself. It's not going to be left with those other people. So it's sacrifice for a higher principle, but it's not actually sacrifice for others. Therefore, the impersonalist will remain at a lower state. While the devotees, then their practice is meant for other people, meant for the Lord and for the devotees. Therefore, this is the higher taste. Right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise, then, okay, you give up the lower taste for the higher taste, like the child eats the sandesh and then stops eating the mud. So that's a general explanation that works in the beginning, because what we do it for ourselves. But here we're talking about that we're doing it beyond ourselves, we're doing it for others. Right? So, therefore, because it will please others, then it won't be involved in. Right? The husband here sets the field. Then within that field, it's the wife's choice what will be operated at the time. That's fine. That's righteous. But here we see there's a mix. There's a stepping over the line, because there's aspects of the field that aren't supposed to be available. So the wrong time is one of them. Right? The problem was their prajapatis. So for them to try to have children, that's not the problem. Right? The problem is wrong time. And we were looking at just waiting for the sandhya. He says a few moments. But the greed is so much, as if means you conceive a child, you're still going to wait 9-10 months anyway. So after 9-10 months, I don't think 24 minutes is really going to make that much difference. Does that make sense? So this is the principle of satisfaction. Is that satisfaction has to be endeavored for. Only then one can satisfy. That's the principle. Means you can't make someone happy who is unwilling to be happy. Right? So in the same way, you cannot make someone satisfied who's unwilling to be so. So that's the point, is that the wife is doing her best to be satisfied by her own endeavors. Then, by the endeavors of the husband, then she is able to be that. But if she's not making that endeavor, it doesn't matter how hard he tries, it won't work. So here, then we see is that, but in here, in the purports, the complaint is not being made about her. I mean, they do refer to her as a common prostitute, that she's behaving like one. But other than that, all the purports are talking about him, because he sets the field. So therefore, the field was open for beyond just religious principles. He's a prajapati, he knows all the religious principles. But he was open to something beyond that. So therefore, it's available. The wife took it. So actually, more at fault here is him. She not being able to control herself, that happens. That's not actually the problem. The problem is him being able to deal with that. That's the actual principle. So that's a matter of training, right? That's a matter of knowing what to do and having the character to do it. That's why knowledge is never enough. One can have knowledge, but one has to be able to practice that knowledge. One has to be able to apply that knowledge. So that takes character. That's why the pastimes are based on quality, not on form. We don't say name, form, pastimes. We say name, form, qualities, pastimes. Because of the qualities, then there are pastimes. Right? You have someone who has good character, and in a particular position, he will do certain activities. If you have the same situation in a person of bad character, the activities will be different. You understand? So it's the qualities that make the pastime. So knowledge is then from knowledge, by practice, you can get skills. But the point is if that knowledge is not in connection with qualities, good qualities or character, what will you use that skills for? Does that make sense? So it's not enough to to have knowledge. It's not enough to have skills. If there's no values, if there's no character, it will simply be a disturbance. That's all. It's just a disturbance. Right? Before, those who had no character lived out in the jungle. So if they want to make trouble, it's not going to bother many people. Right? How much trouble can you make if you go out in the middle of the forest, start yelling and screaming and jumping around and pulling the bushes and all this and that? You can't do a whole lot. Right? But if you're in the city, it disturbs other people. Right? So that's the whole idea, is that in human culture, there's supposed to be character. So therefore, the impersonalist can develop character, but it doesn't have the depth that the personalist has. Doesn't have the depth, can't have the depth. Because they're not working for others. The sense of sacrifice is not that great. So here, tasting a higher taste to give up a lower means when one has tasted that element of working for the other's benefit, one can give up working for oneself. Right? Because we can understand here is that even though all this has been said about the position of the wife and all that, that his position of taking up this interaction was not exactly based on the principles of sacrifice for her. Does that make sense? Means in the practice of one's sadhana, one performs activities. And these performance of the activities will be based on one's own, interest. And that's natural. That's how things start. Right? We're working for our own interest now, so might as well be working for our own interest based on higher principles. Right? Therefore, we find that by working on the higher principles, we get a better result for ourselves than working on lower ones. Right? So if you use good qualities, you get better results. Right? Of course, you have to have a little bit of intelligence to appreciate this, otherwise you can't see the difference between immediate and a little bit of long term. But in any case, taking it that we have that intelligence, then we appreciate that, okay, I follow the rules, I do things right, I behave right with others, therefore I get better results. So, therefore, that's your higher taste, giving up the lower taste. But we still notice it's about ourselves. So that sacrifice is sacrifice, basically, of the senses into the sense objects or other such things that are proper, according to the rules. But it's not sacrifice between, it's not the sacrifice of rasa. I mean, I'll say it is sacrifice of rasa, but not of, on the personal platform. Right? It's still just dealing with rules for your own benefit. Right? Then at some point we see is that we do this the other person's benefit. We actually appreciate what they're gaining from that, and that is what inspires us. Right? It's another platform. Does that make sense? How to distinguish? One may think one is on this platform, others are on this platform. The distinguishment is like Lord Shiva. There are no preferences. Right? Does that make sense? It's not according to category. It's not according to just general life. Those are symptoms that it's pranamoy, it's extended sense gratification. Just you're a nice person, you know that you like things nice, so why would other people like it bad? They would like it nice also. So therefore, because you have sufficient yourself, you're willing therefore to share it or extend yourself so that others may also benefit. Right? Does that make sense? So you have something, you're willing to share it. So this is good. This is the next stage, step up. This is what we're talking about. But it's not actually based on the inherent nature of the other person that that's why you're working with it. You're working with it because it's important to you. Not that it's important to them. But because it's important to you, it also happens to be important to them you have a common platform. Right? It's very subtle. Therefore, then your care for others then is inconsistent, because you're very caring for some groups and other groups you couldn't care less about them. In fact, you might even work against them. You'll be very inconsistent in your application of this principle. Does that make sense? So that's the difference between someone who is functioning on the level of pranamoy, someone who's functioning on the level of manamoy. Because manamoy, it's the rule. So if the rule applies, it doesn't matter who it is, it applies to them. The rule doesn't apply, it doesn't matter who it is, it doesn't apply. Right? But in pranamoy, the rule applies, you like this kind of person or this kind of scenario, therefore you apply it. The rule applies, you don't care for that kind of person or category, therefore you don't apply it. It's not your business anyway, right? Does that make sense? So, this is the difference. So this is the difference between one who basically is categorized as liberal and one who actually is liberal. Right? Does that make sense? Difference being is one is there because of balance, the other is there is just because of extended unbalance. But at least it's a good, it's a pious, its motive is good. You want to please others, though you're limited in how broad you can extend that. Right? So we see here, because of this, then the impersonalists are going to be limited, because they are not actually going to function properly in actual rasa. Because what they're doing is for themselves. Does that make sense? Means until you understand who you're dealing with, full rasa can't be appreciated. Right? That's why then, though it looks very good, and in this world they're considered very great people, the pranamoyist and the vijnanamoyist, right? So are the extended karmi and the impersonalist, right? Because both of them seemingly work for others, they have knowledge, they're manifesting certain qualities. You have to have some good qualities to work in these platforms. But because it's actually for themselves, the relationship is not actually that deep. Right? Does that make sense? There are transitions between. The transition between anamoy and manamoy is pranamoy. But pranamoy is not a place you can stay. Right? Just like in music, you have notes you can hold. There's notes you can't hold. You hold it, it changes the mood. It can be moved through. It can't be used as an identity, as a place. These people we always notice are kicked out when the acharyas talk about who's unqualified to read their book, because they will not appreciate rasa. They don't appreciate. They talk about relationships, but they don't actually appreciate, because for them it's simply the experience they're getting. It's not actually the importance of the experience the other one's getting. It's subtle, but it's important. Because this makes the difference. This is how you can move up through the conditioned nature. Right? Because conditioned means it's something we have to deal with. Constitutional, that's very direct, very straightforward. But the conditional, that's the difficulty. That's where all the contradictions come in. In the spiritual, the contradictions are already worked out. We don't have to worry about that. You know, we don't have to worry that all they want to do is be with Krishna, but as soon as he comes around, they start arguing with him and tell him to go away. We don't have to worry about that. They know how to do this. We have to deal with here, in that these contradictions make us forget Krishna, distract us from Krishna, think we're doing a great job, when we might not be. You know what I'm saying? If we only care about the cows but not about other members of the community, then that's prana moy, and your prana that you're worried about moves through the body of a cow. It's not dharma. Because dharma means as you would care for the cows, then you have to care for also the old persons, the Brahmins, the women, and the, what is it? And the children. Right? Does that make sense? Someone who can deal with all of them, that is the person situated in religion. That person's balanced. Otherwise, you'll see, it's very common social issues that one of these five, because they're unprotected, and somebody with some intelligence and sensitivity notices it, then they take it up as a issue, as a crusade. Nice. But then they should be working that against those who are opposed to it, not against the other four. Right? You understand? But it's always against one of these others. Therefore, it's not that developed. Right? I'm talking about topical issue today. This is not some theoretical. This is going on right now. Think of all the issues you got, how they work. Are they established on their own right, or are they established because someone else is wrong and someone else has to be adjusted to make yours right? Right? It's not that you take yours, move it forward. No, you push everyone else down, then hey, it's in the top position. Does that make sense? So this is an application of this right here, right? Means you can apply this, of course, as it talks here in the bedroom. If you're bold enough, right? Otherwise, we just forget about it. Oh, we don't talk about those things. But this verse here applies also outside the bedroom. Right? It applies in everything that you do. Is it being done for the higher purpose of austerity and sacrifice for Krishna and the devotees? Or is it just something we're doing for ourselves? Maybe good, maybe nice. Either by Vedic definition or non-Vedic. But is it enough? Right? That's the question. Right? These stories are here, not so we just, okay, another day and have another 15 minutes and we can be out of here. These things are here to use in our life. And they're using all scenarios, everything, right? So now if people say, oh, it's just philosophy, it's not practical. You're going to tell me in the bedroom trying to have a kid is not practical? Go ahead, try it. How's it go? Make my day. Right? So, it's not a good argument. Popular as anything, but not a good argument at all. Discussions between husband and wife, how they discuss, what is being brought up, what are the situations. Everything that you do in your life, you don't take a bath, you don't chant Gayatri, no one tries to conceive children, no one takes a bath afterwards. Right? No one goes to a secluded place. No, we like to walk around in the park and show up. Hey, I got myself, you know, a boy or a girl. Right? Here it says secluded place. Practical. Right? What is not discussed, what in your life is not discussed in this book? That's the real question. And that's the question no one's willing to deal with. Because the answer is nothing. Whatever's in your life, never think your life is so special it steps out of the realm of the Shastras. Right? Vyasadeva sees past, present, and future. And he can't see your life. You're unique. Right? Krishna, who gives the scriptures. Brahma, who then gives them to his children. Right? The paramparas, what Lakshmi can't see. Right? The four Kumaras can't see. What Lord Shiva can't see, that's you. Right? You're so special. Right? The point is it's right here. That's why we study it. That's why it's important, right? If something else is more important and practical, we'd be reading that in this class. Isn't it? Whatever is the most important book for us, that's what we'd be studying right now. But Bhagavatam is the conclusion of everything. It's the conclusion of Veda. Veda means knowledge. Knowledge means what works. Right? The Veda concept of knowledge is what is, in theory, is perfect, and in practical application is perfect. Right? And if you don't understand it or don't apply it, it means you need to practice it more yourself. There's nothing wrong with the scriptures. So therefore, here, it's not a matter of, means we have to see beyond the elements here, otherwise we tend to throw it out. Oh, it's about sex life, so brahmachari, sannyasis, everybody throws it out. No, these are principles here that we're working with. Because you have to set the field. Within that field, you have to function. You're going to be able to set the field and function within it at your best if that field is something that's in connection with the Lord. In other words, it's personal, not impersonal. Right. Yes. What are symptoms to get to in ourselves to understand the level of consciousness? Okay, so then you have anamoy, pranamoy, manamoy, vijnanamoy, and anandamoy. Manamoy is also sometimes called jnanamoy, right? So jnanamoy, manamoy are the same thing. Anamoy means it's the senses. Everything that you do is in connection with the senses. If you don't see it, you don't believe it. So children, they're in that platform automatically, right? Because everything that they get must be tested. And it goes into the mouth for the test. Right? So, yeah. Then, with time, they start to, and they're only worried about themselves. So with time, then they start to notice that there's others around. There's mommy and daddy. So then prana, it comes out. Then manamoy, they start to see there's duties. Right? Then vijnanamoy, they start to see that they have to work on this principle of sacrifice, giving up. And then eventually anandamoy, they come to the transcendental platform. So that's one description, just so you can see a flow there. But otherwise, the scientists and the shaktas are in the first platform. If you go by the Panchopasana, then they're in that first platform. Is that it's about the senses, either in the way of engaging them or by gaining knowledge. That's the only way a scientist knows how to gain knowledge. Right? His intelligence is fine-tuned to his senses, and that's it. Like that. It's not actually that impressive. Right? Because if you can't see it, you don't believe it. Pranamoy then means, then there's two categories, sauryas or ganapatyas. Sauryas then is life in general. You're just worried about life. Don't hurt a life, you know, cultivate life, make it easy for life, you know, so that life can prosper. But it's not specific. Ganapatya means that it's specific. You are, you are dedicated to improving the quality of life in one particular category of life. You know, like, you know, save the blue whale or something, or, you know, does that make sense? You're only worried about those people in Somalia, right? They can be dying in your backyard, starving to death, but it doesn't matter. You know? Then, so the pranamoy, then, the symptom there, I mean, that would be a general. Saika? What would be, well, the gana means your saurya then is life, so it has the element of the impersonal. the Ganapati would have more personal. So in one sense, it depends upon how you look at it. You could say the personal is better. It will be easier to work with the Ganapatya than it will be with the Surya for us. Because it's like the means technically you could say the Surya is higher in that he deals with all life. But the problem is he won't make any distinction. Therefore, he can't distinguish between devotee, non-devotee, advanced devotee, neophyte devotee. He doesn't make any distinction. So we'll come into a problem there. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like someone committed to their senses and is willing to work hard for them will actually be easier to deal with and make advance than the person who's not sure what they should do and they'd like to but they can't and they can never really get it to focus together to be involved in sense gratification. You know, he's useless as a non-devotee. He'll be in the same state of mind as a devotee. At least he's chanting, so that's good. But as far as dynamically getting anything done, no. That gross materialist who's committed to the material energy, you convince him of Krishna consciousness, he will do something special. Because he knows how to focus, he knows how to get a result. Does that make sense? Like that. So does that make sense there? So therefore the Ganapatya, because he sees groups, therefore you can work. Now it's just a matter of getting to be unbiased towards one and biased towards another and all these different things. But at least he can make distinction. Well, the other one, oh, it's everybody's nice, and why just the devotees, and why just this, and everybody should be, we should do for everybody, and so it's for everybody, so therefore it's kind of for nobody. Right? Like that. So that's you have both. Symptoms, also other symptoms that will be very important in working with is the person on pranamoy, then mundane morality, not based on Vedic principles, justice, and economics. These will be very important to them. In fact, the three are synonymous. Justice is there because if it's not there, economics drops. Morality is there because if it's not there, how do you maintain justice? Therefore, economics can't function. Right? I work hard, then someone else takes it from me. Then what's the use of my economics? Does that make sense? So it's very, very important for them. So it will be issues. So you'll see, in observing, you see the broad range. And so if that concern for others is there, but at the same time the strong economics or ethical or that, at the expense of the Vedic system, then you know it's pranamoy. Right? Manamoy then means it's according to the actual nature of the thing. That's why you're supposed to be nice. The other one, you're just supposed to be nice, you're supposed to be good. Why should it be nice and good? Under what authority? It just feels better, right? It feels better. So therefore, it's said to be religious, but what religion teaches religion? They all teach sub-religion. Be nice, be good. That's Upadharma, right? Other than the Vedic, other than Varnashram, no one teaches religion. They all teach sub-religion. They all teach pranamaya. Be good, be nice, don't steal. Right? That's what they teach. They don't teach above that. So, therefore, why is it there? It's because of religion that it's there, but why? That cannot be explained. Why should I be nice? Why should I feed the starving people? Why should I help the old lady across the street? Why should I stop and help if someone's in trouble? Why? That they can't explain. Oh, it's good, it's nice. That's all you're going to get. They can't explain. It's the inherent nature of a relationship. This person needs this kind of, is in this kind of distress. You are in a position that have a relationship you could help with that distress. Therefore, it's the nature of the relationship that you would. But who defines what is the relationship and what you should do? That's Dharma. That's God. Not ourselves. You can speculate on what's good and what's nice, but you can't speculate on nature, because if you follow it, it works. The other party and you are happy. If you're interacting and the other party and you are not happy, you're not dealing with Dharma. Does that make sense? Right? A leader is doing his duties and no one in his zone is happy. He's not following Dharma. Right? Husband and wife are interacting. They're not satisfied. They're not following Dharma. They may be following the rules that they're supposed to do, which is good. But they haven't understood the inherent nature of what they're dealing with. What is a leader? What is a citizen? What is a husband? What is a wife? What is a parent? What is a child? That they don't know. Therefore, when they speculate, they come up with something that doesn't work. So a symptom of someone who's functioning in Dharma is it has to be done that way, even if it means loss for me. Someone in Pranamoy won't suffer loss. Right? They have to, I give away a lot of money, but then when I see those smiling children, that's my profit. Right? Why do you think those really big people who give a lot of money, they don't sit in their apartment in New York. They fly down to wherever it is that they're giving the money to see those smiling faces. Right? They're giving so much. You give a little bit, okay, you know it's good. But they give so much, they got to get some profit out of it. You give millions, you got to get profit. So they go, they see that smile, that's enough. That one smile, that one little girl, and she, you know, oh, thank you, you know. And that's it. You know, it was worth the millions of dollars. It's profit. But the other one is, it's the nature that the other one is satisfied. That means that the you have properly performed your duties. The austerity has been properly performed. The sacrifice has been properly formed. Therefore, the taste that's gotten there is much deeper. But it's more subtle. Right? For this, then, it would be important to understand the method of also acquiring your knowledge on these platforms. So anamai is through the senses only. Pranamai is through someone else. You heard it was good, it was nice. That one says, oh, they're good. Oh, okay. Oh, this person's bad. Oh, okay. Right? Sound familiar? Right? So much of our information that we have in our knowledge is actually through someone else. But in the way of pranamoy. It's not based on shastra. It's not based on authority. So that's called paroksha. Right? Prakriti, then it's, you know, prakriti. It's in paroksha. Then is what you hear from others. You know, and what you do for others. And what you get based from others. But it's all your profit. Aparoksha means it is not observed. It's experienced only. Right? Because the other one, oh, isn't it so nice? She's so happy and all that. Isn't all these kids are so happy? Isn't this great? Wasn't that worth it? That can't be aparoksha. Because aparoksha, as soon as you recognize it, it doesn't exist. Because as soon as you recognize it, you're dealing with the past. And aparoksha only functions in the present. It can't function in the future, it can't function in the past. It's right now. So it's very subtle. It's actually the mode of goodness. Right? But there's action, so there's some passion in it. So then one can identify that platform. Why is one doing it? Because it has to be done. Kings will lose their whole kingdom. They'll give up their life to follow their religious principles. People on Pranamoy won't do that. Like that. Then Vijnanamoy, is something on that? It's Vijnanamoy, then knowledge is the position. You have to know why it works, technically why it works, the metaphysics of it. How it gets you beyond. How does the physical and the spiritual connect? What is that transition? How does it move from one level of material from a lower to a higher? What's the mechanics of it? The soul, understanding the soul, Brahman, the nature of that. And that knowledge is through descent. The Lord descends into it. So it's by realization. So that means it's only gained by practice. Armchair speculators can never be here. So you can say, oh yes, he always thinks, but does he do something? If he doesn't do something, then he's down on probably the first or maybe second platform. Like that. Actually, first platform. Armchair speculator has to be on Amoy. They're using the intelligence, but their purpose is themselves. The experience. Because manamoy actually means it's a relationship. The mind, what it's accepting or rejecting, is relationships. It's a relationship between a thought, but a relationship between a sense. But it doesn't have any meaning in their life. Manamoy, it means something to your life. It is your life. Your life functions on this. These others, it may be your life functions on. That's why we say their life is shallow. Or we say, get a life. Those on the platform of manamoy, they have life. That's why we read about them, right? That's why Brahmins and Kshatriyas we read about. You don't hear about Vaishyas and Shudras in the scriptures. Because the tendency, if they're devotees, there's something to hear. But in their conditioned nature, then much of the time, they're only interested in anamoy pranamoy. Therefore, there's not as much to gain, because Bhagavatam starts from manamoy. It says, follow religion, dharma. But dharma shouldn't be for art and kama. Dharma should be for upliftment. Does that make sense? Right? So, basically, and it's by realization through constant practice of the having this knowledge with religion. In other words, knowledge and religious principles combined gives you the realization that actually situates you in Vijnanamoy. Is that okay? Saying that the knowledge that you would have that's on the platform of Vijnanamoy, if it's combined with the understandings and activities of the manamoy, that will give you realization. Then you are actually situated in that Vijnanamoy. Right? Like that. So one you see is it's about themselves. The other one you see it's about others, but it's not necessarily a shastric base, or it has economic and other considerations to it. All their knowledge is gained from others, not from authority. Right? This one said, that one said, the latest gossip, that's the authority. The manamoy means it's based on shastra, there's full faith in shastra, it's guru, sadhu, and shastra, that's the basis. Understanding the relationships, working in those relationships, performing your duties, that's your austerity, doing it to please others as you come to the higher platforms, and that it's being experienced. You're not talking about how great it is, you're living it. Right? You know, quoting from one great personality, he who speaks does not know, wasn't that what Vivekananda said, right? So, like that. Then you can understand that. The other one is that then, taking it further, that it's the relationship, but you want to get out of here. So you have to know the metaphysics to it, technically why it's working. That in combination with applying it will situate you on the liberated platform. Then you will function in the realm of Brahman. Right? It means you'll do everything according to religious principles, but you will be situated in Brahman. Right? And your knowledge is gained through realization. Is that okay? So one's realization, one's experience, one's heard from others, one's direct sense perception. Is that okay? Okay. Kind of end on time. Was you on something before, or was it in some point before on this? Oh, in relationship to the text. Okay. Well, then in that case, then maybe we'll stop here and then we'll continue with questions anybody wants after a few minutes like that. Okay? Sorry. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi, Harivau Gaura Harivau. because you're not going to be very absorbed. It's not progressive, the mentality, because I'm fallen that you want to remain that way. It's just like, wow, you know, it's a hot day, I'm so hot and sweaty. Wow, I'm hot and sweaty, you know. What can I do? I'm hot and sweaty, you know. It's like, why don't you go take a bath? No, but I'm hot and sweaty, you know. How can I take a bath? So why not improve yourself? You make the attempt. Try to come to the platform the second couple. Sometimes by accident, but it's very rare. Still, his father was chanting Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya and was thinking of the pure devotee at the time of conception. So, it does have some effect. I guess he wasn't, I guess, you know, Hiranyaksha is the other half. You know. I mean, no, that was his son. That was the, yeah. So they were, because you can see there, they were. It won't go away. It means you can't deal with it, so maybe on that side they'll relax. From the Malecha process, then they'll see, okay, maybe it's not worth it. And then maybe they'll be able to, at the point, if it works, everything lines up, they'll be able to make the cross. But there's no guarantee. You know what I'm saying? They could slip if something could happen, you know. How you say the white figures out, there's such a thing as a yagra, you know. So that, you know, then, you know, it won't work anymore. So it's... He'll try, but you know, it's like trying to take something away from the baby. It's a little hard, you know. You got to give him something else. You know? Yeah. No, it is. Okay. Now we'll go regular questions. It means we can discuss it, but it's going to be now open. Understand? Yeah. I'm just saying that we'll just start back with the discussion. Well, it's not class, just question and answer. But I'm just saying is that we'll continue like that. It was just, you know, let everyone go. So then we had one question was there was on those who we'll get Kontia, then we'll come to you. Those who you have a couple, they're able to follow everything nicely through their, you know, life and all that. That's one scenario. Those who are making the attempt, it works to some degree. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Then you have those that don't even bother because I'm fallen. What does it mean? You know, I can't do anything about it or anything. So one is goodness, one's passion, one's ignorance. Is that ignorance doesn't have an excuse. One is in a position, yes. No one's complaining about that. That would be improper to say, oh, you're in that position, then that's nonsense. No, it's nonsense to want to stay there. Right? That's the difficulty. As we notice, it's not complaining about certain things. The Bhagavatam's not complaining about certain elements. It's making the point about who doesn't want to do anything about it. Does that make sense? In other words, as a devotee, your ability to preach and to be a member of the community will increase if you can accommodate other people's position where they're starting from. Right? Otherwise, if we want to go by, you have to be squeaky clean to take up Krishna consciousness, who could take it up? You know what I'm saying? Who would there be there to take it up? And the only people to take it up would basically be the people that normally devotees militate against. The ones that are born into good families, follow the Vedic culture, follow authority, you know, do all those nice rules and all that that we say are impractical, don't work in Kali Yuga, though millions of them are following it today. Like that. Some of them are even following in America, believe it or not. So, like that. Then where would we put? It means everybody's from a different background. What they come with, that doesn't matter. It's what are you willing to do with it. That's what's important. Then you can move forward. So if you can acknowledge that in yourself, you can acknowledge it in others. So therefore, the reason that the movement will be actually very intolerant towards any weakness on anyone's part is because the individual is intolerant with themselves in it. And this intolerant means they're actually not able to work with it. Otherwise, you could give a plan. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Does that make sense? Yeah? It means someone does something wrong, you give them a method to improve themselves, to purify themselves, to uplift themselves. Right? The punishment is supposed to rectify. Right? It's rectification. Right? That's dharma. Someone has done something wrong, then the dharma of the criminal is they've done something wrong, they have to be brought to the right path. So proper dharma will bring them to the right path. Right? Lower than that, justice is they've done something wrong, they should get some punishment for that. That's all, because it's not right to do things wrong. Why should it be like that? That cannot be explained. Right? This person did this. He was a leader, he did this. Therefore, he has to be thrown out. He can't be given any position, no service. You know, he could wash the pots or, you know, lick the road clean with his, you know, tongue, you know, while everyone's walking on it, not, you know, when no one's walking on it, you know, like that. And then that's supposedly going to do something. It makes us feel good, but it did nothing for actually improving the quality of the other person, their Krishna consciousness, nothing. Why? Because it's against dharma. They're a leader, so they're going to purify themselves through performing activities of leadership for Krishna. That, at least that's how Prabhupada followed it. He wasn't known as a great pranamoyist, Srila Prabhupada. So therefore, his methods may not be very popular these days. So, the idea is it has to purify. It has to uplift. So one is unwilling to work with that quality, inappropriate quality in oneself. Recognize it, work with it in a progressive way. Therefore, one can recognize it in others and is unwilling to work with it, other than for chastisement. Does that make sense? Right? Those who are interested in self-realization, when they find others with weaknesses, help them through those weaknesses. If taking them out of the situation that they're in will help that, then you do that. If it won't, you won't. Does that make sense? The person's the temple president. They've messed up in some way. So if by removing them from that, it will actually improve it for them and their advancement, then you'll do that. But if it won't, they'll actually do better by staying in the position, okay, I made a mistake, now let's try harder, let's move forward, then you will leave them there. If you remove them from there, don't count it as devotional service. Don't count it you're doing something good for the movement. Just understand it makes you and your cronies feel good. That's all. It has nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. Absolutely zero. You may stand on your soapbox and say, no, it is, but the people are complaining. But why are these people complaining? Because they're in ignorance. Because they themselves have the same quality that they refuse to recognize and refuse to deal with. Therefore, it makes them feel good. I'm dealing with my own qualities, sinful qualities, by chastising others' sinful activities. You understand the method? But it's always been there. The neophyte is always has a tendency to fall into that, right? That's the famous one with the acharyas with the, you know, the girl and the rocks and the wall, right? Whoever likes to throw the rock, you don't have any of these qualities, right? But that's the point, right? The acharya doesn't have the qualities. Is he standing up and going, oh, adulteress, yeah, hey, where's the rocks? So the point is, he's the only one qualified to throw the rocks. and guaranteed that lady standing at the wall would not mind if he and people like him threw the rocks. In fact, she would probably feel purified. But neither she gets the benefit or no one else gets the benefit, because they're only doing it to cover their own faults. And they feel that by dealing with this in others, then I have dealt with it in myself, which they haven't. And that psychology then keeps everything neophyte. Right? It keeps all the frogs in the box, even without the lid. Because as soon as someone actually tries to progress, they're not allowed. Because if someone else gets out of the box, that means I could get out of the box. Right? And I can just go on with my life and add into Krishna consciousness how I like. I go to the temple when I like. I do what I like. I, this, that. And it's enough. No one should complain because I'm just being practical. Better than this. It's because, see, everybody's like this. Right? You go to the park. No one's dressed nice. You can say, why don't you dress nice? And they can turn around and go, everybody's dressed like this. What's the problem? Right? In the middle of Bengal, where every millions of guests that come here every day are not dressed like that. Does that make sense? So that's the reason for it. That's the reason we're so comfortable with it. That's why we're willing to fight for it. Because we feel comfortable. Right? Isn't it? When things go wrong, you want to be in a comfortable position. Right? I think it's said that all the airline pilots, you know, when the plane goes down, the last sound on the black box is, Mommy! Right? Like that. You know, when they know that's it, they can do nothing else, they're going to crash, then they take shelter of their mom, right? Because they're nice guys. You know, they've gone to school, they've controlled themselves like that, and so, you know, they're dutiful, right? So they have... like that. So that's the point. Time of death, you think of something, when things go wrong, you take shelter of certain situations or food or people. Right? So in the same way as when things don't go right in your spiritual life, you take shelter of those things which are comfortable. And what's comfortable? Right? Middle class America. You just revert back to whatever it was that was comfortable before. It's natural. It's just the way the setting... That's why you have to make the endeavor and practice to get beyond that. Otherwise, that's the natural setting. At the time of death, it will be set to one of those, unless you change the setting. But it won't change on its own. You have to change it. Right? So that's the idea. Therefore, that first position's not very useful. The second one, you're making the attempt. It doesn't always work, but still you're making the attempt. And you know that making the attempt is the most important. So you're always trying. So even if something goes wrong, you don't give up. Because by having knowledge and activity, proper activity with proper knowledge, then it will come. You will get the habit. You will develop the quality. So if it's not coming, then there might be something wrong with your knowledge or wrong with your habit. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? It is like, okay, being practical. Someone can say, okay, been a soul life long and I didn't get rid of sex desire. Right? But then you look at it, how are you going to get rid of sex desire when you're dealing with 3 minutes? You understand? You don't understand. Just trying to be a little subtle here. Okay. It means... once you actually get into sex, how long do you got? How many minutes? Right? You got 3 to 5 minutes of push-ups, right? Does that make sense? So how often is that? You add up those 5 minutes. How much do you get? A couple hours? Right? Then? How are you going to say you're going to get it? Because then you can say is, you don't know what you're doing. Because it's not connected to Shastra, it's not connected to anything. So why are you only dealing with 3 minutes? Whose 3 minutes? Who lasts 3 minutes? The man. So that means it's not religious. Why? Because it's only about the man. If it was about the woman, you'd be dealing with hours and hours of, you know, pleasant emotional interaction. And in that, you have to work. And you have to make sure you don't say the wrong thing and do the wrong thing, because in those many hours, you might not get those 3 minutes. So how much austerity and sacrifice is there in that? Because there wasn't any in your 3 minutes, except for, you know, how you say, you know, the push-ups, you know, it's tough work. Does that make sense? Then you're dealing with, you know, if you add it up, then you have a lot more time. So that's the problem, is it's not seen what it is you're actually dealing with. Point is attachment to sex, okay. But there's a lot that goes with it. Right? The sex then has to be connected to romance. The romance has to be connected to facilities and emotional input and time. So then that means if you're doing it right, then basically, other than when you're chanting your japa and doing other direct spiritual activities, everything else that you're doing is helping you remove your sex desire. Because basically, why do you need a house? Right? You can live under a tree. Why do you need a house? You keep a wife. Why do you need a wife? You understand? So you have a house because of the desire for sex. You have money because of the desire for sex. You have other facilities because of the desire for sex. All your social status, distinction, adoration, profit. Dhanam Janam Sundari. It's the same thing, just the grosser and subtler aspects. You want to get rid of the sex, you have to get rid of the whole package. Because no one has ever been satisfied with 3 minutes, I'm telling you. Right? Right? Does that make sense? People still talk about Romeo and Juliet. Are we dealing with any 3 minutes here? No, we're only dealing with everything around that. This is the science that's absolutely, totally missed. Absolutely. Right? Right? And so then what's the solution? Okay, you're going to get rid of this by, you know, you hate the women. Okay, great. If it works, but I haven't noticed that any of the great, you know, how you say, leading women haters of days of yore are still in that same ashram. You know what I'm saying? So it didn't work. You know what I'm saying? So it's a matter of working with the thorn with the thorn. If you think the woman is a thorn, then you have to deal with it to get rid of it. I'll ignore it. It's not there. It's a stupid thorn. Right? Yeah, well, it's getting infected. Yeah, it's turning into a big, you know, pussy thing like that. But it doesn't matter. It's stupid. I'm not dealing with it. So that's the difficulty. It's not understood. The science. So this is religion. What is the inherent nature? What is man? What is woman? How to deal with it? That's what it is. It's not just, okay, well, they were, you know, they grit their teeth and they follow all the principles. Right? Of course, to be able to do that just on that, that means they have to be very pure to do that. But how did they get themselves to that platform of purity? Right? So you get there through knowledge and practice. So anyone through knowledge and practice, can get to any elevated position. Right? Does that make sense? You know, I hope that wasn't too blunt. Wasn't too gross. Okay. Does that make sense? Just sometimes this, how you say, the best, the best defense is offense. You know, it's just, you know, hit him between the eyes, and sometimes, otherwise it's, oh yeah, nice, 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 but then, you know, get him right where it counts, you know. Is on this, or, okay, because otherwise then we were with Conti's question, yeah. Desire for sex or desire for relationship, yes.
So if you fulfill the relationship, then the sex
is good. The sex, yeah. Yeah. Means, point is that sex is part of relationship, right? Man just sees it as sense gratification. Women don't. It's connected with the emotions. It's an extension of emotions. It's just, it's one manifestation of emotional intimacy. It's just the way it's seen. For a man, it's an itch. For a woman, it's not an itch. You know, I'm saying itch is there, but that's not what's prominent. You know what I'm saying? It's not the prominence. So if one understands the whole field, you're trying to remove your idea that I am a man, right? And bottom line, if nothing else, you can say you're a man because you can have sex. Does that make sense? So then that becomes a difficulty, because if that's your definition of manliness, then what about the other, you know, 20, you know, what is it, 23 hours, 57 minutes, you know, unless you're more active. Okay, then, okay, 23 hours and, 51 minutes. Okay? How do you prove your masculinity? Okay, bash the lady around, yell and scream a bit. You know, okay, great. She wasn't impressed, but, you know, your friends were. Your friends are going to be impressed. But it didn't actually do anything. Because masculinity is a nature. You act within that nature, then it's fulfilled. And having fulfilled it, you can remove it. If you fulfill it in relationship to Krishna, you remove it. You don't fulfill it in relation to Krishna, it doesn't go away. You can make yourself more pious, you can elevate yourself to the heavenly planets, but you haven't reduced your need for it. You know what I'm saying? Indra still is in need. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty, is that just doing it right isn't good enough. It's doing it right to please Krishna. Right? And if need be, doing it right, meaning you have the proper knowledge of what you're dealing with, then it will work. Because the point is it true that we are masculine? Is the soul masculine? No. And is even the mentality of I'm the controller and enjoyer correct? No. So that means the whole basis of one's masculine concept is 100% wrong. Nothing's right about it. You know, I mean, we can look at, okay, anatomically correct, but that's about it. Other than that, it's not correct. So, since it's there and we think like that all the time, you can't just rely on simply the sexual aspect to deal with it. You have to deal with it all the rest of the day. So that means all of your activities, whatever you're doing, what's the proper attitude? Dealing with that, to do it right, to be a man is a lot of work. Because masculinity is active. It makes the first move. It always follows up. It never stops moving. Feminine is passive. Feminine experiences. So that means it's hard work to be a man. That's why nowadays it's not very popular. Right? Like that. Because you have to work so much. No one wants to work that hard. You have to work. That much work done with knowledge, you're going to burn it out. And so you'll burn it all out because it's all connected. Because if you're working that way, sex is no longer sex anymore. It's part of the dynamics of the masculine-feminine relationship. Right? And it's the last in the dynamics. Right? And so therefore, if you're not doing everything else perfect, how are you going to get to that? And if you haven't done everything else right, then that's not going to be right. Right? So therefore, how are you going to remove the desire? So the proper dealings, that's what's going to remove it. Because the proper dealings means you're going to have to be humble, you're going to have to be tolerant, you're going to have to respect others, you're going to have to not expect anything back. Otherwise, you won't be successful. A man has these qualities. Right? Woman has the nature that lets you practice these qualities. Does that make sense? Right? So therefore, with those qualities, how you won't be able to cross. You can say, oh, well, they're very advanced or they're very pure. That's why they can follow. And I'm not. But the point is if you're not progressive, then you're not dealing with anything anyway. So to get those qualities means it's throughout. It's not just in this one area. Right? Does that make sense? You hear about these great personalities. Do they have only one accomplishment? No. If you have in one, you can have in any of them. So therefore, they have such a broad range of... You know, Hanuman is expert in Sanskrit. He knows Ayurvedic medicine. He's expert in music. Right? And he's a monkey. Right? So it's like their accomplishments are great. That's because they actually understand what is nature. Once you understand that, everything has a nature, so therefore everything is working on the same fundamental principles. Is detail, it looks a little different. You know, and I'm saying you have a car that has an automatic and you have a car that has, you know, a stick shift. It's basically the same thing, but there's some detail difference. But otherwise, if you know driving of one, then with just adding in the little bit with the gear shift or not, then you can do the other. But it's not that you have to learn driving. You understand? So you know one of the Vedic subjects. You know, it's just a matter of understanding the technical aspects of the other one because you already know knowledge. Right? Knowledge is one body, it's one thing. Right? Then it's how it's applied in the different areas. Is that okay? So that's why we're saying is the approach to any of these one problem. That's why Prabhupada said all the problem solution to any problem is Krishna consciousness. And we'll say no. So it's just a matter of if by faith you don't just take it, then through knowledge. That's why 6 chapters of Bhagavad Gita are dedicated to the metaphysics of how all the other 12 chapters before that are explaining. Right? You want to know why? Okay, here's technically how it works, how the modes work, how everything works, how it does. Then you can technically see what's going on if you need. If just hearing about it, that's enough you can do, then that's easier. Right? You need to know why, then we got answers. Does that make sense? So therefore, it's much broader. It's one package. You want to remove it for this, you got to remove it for everything. It means the problem's not sex, the problem is the need for women. You get rid of the need for women... that's part of the package. That goes along with the package. So just trying to get rid of the one aspect, how are you going to do it? Because you still have need for women. So when you engage all the aspects, because when you add that in, then how much of your day is taken in your need to be with women and to please them? Then it takes up a lot more of your day. So if you're dealing with that and connecting that to Krishna through proper knowledge and endeavor, then you can remove the whole package. Why go for the one? You go for the whole package. You understand? But it's so perfect that the women don't have to worry that their husbands, this is their determination. Because in the Vedic system, someone who has attained to that position will perform the activities of that position even better than the one who needs to be in that position. Right? The Pandavas are liberated. They're better husbands than most anybody else. Right? Because they do everything out of, because this is the religion. Women are like this, men are like this, the relationship between husband and wife is like this. Therefore, I do these activities, and therefore the women are happy, the family is happy, everything works. Because then its nature is being followed. The nature of the household. It has a nature. You're following that. Therefore, everybody's happy. Even though you have nothing to gain from it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is that it's so perfect that it doesn't, whether you're attached or not attached, it works. And if you're attached, you need to be in it. And even if you're unattached, if you're still in that situation, you don't have to leave it. You don't have to change. That's why Prabhupada's saying you don't have to change anything to take up Krishna consciousness. You just have to change the consciousness. Because this is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, not International Society for Change Everything in Your Life, you know. Does that make sense? You change the consciousness, everything else adjusts as it needs to. If it needs to adjust, it will. If it doesn't need to, it doesn't. Is that okay? Okay, last on this point, and then we'll get back to it. Okay. Yes, Anna? They're different, yeah. Yes, okay. Yes, okay. Could you hear that? Okay, so she's saying is that on the last point, which is a point on expanding, and the point is there's no need to leave. It means even the husband becomes. Because the man is there because of the need of the qualities that he finds inherent in the woman in the man. So therefore, that gain in the completeness, like Prabhupada mentions, man's not complete without woman, woman not complete without man. That's why someone identifies as a man. You know, we're tough, we're brahmacharis, we're men. That's why they need women. You know, if we're brahmacharis, we're not men, we're not women, then those ones remain brahmacharis. Right? So, there's a need of the qualities, so then, therefore the interaction's not a problem. It's the nature, it's the science. So if it's connected to Krishna, then it's elevating. It's not connected to Krishna, it's very pious. You'll remain here a long time, in good situations. But, it's done with Krishna, then it will get you out. But the reason that also, as you mentioned there, is that the man has to get rid of the Purusha Bhav, means he in general, it means that is what he thinks. The feminine part doesn't have to give up the attachment to male, because Krishna is male. So it's just a matter of switching from, you know, these certain bags of stool and urine here that we call male, but to Krishna. At the same time, is what does make trouble is their Purusha Bhava, the masculine element in the women. So that's called the Purusha Shakti. It's an energy, but it thinks it has a masculine attitude. So because of that, that's what makes it harder to make it run smoothly. But the only way to get rid of it is if the man is completely performing the duties of a man, then the woman can drop the Purusha Bhav. Then she can be feminine. Then that gets rid of it for her. But it still comes back to the man. Like that. So does that make sense? So it's a natural thing. It works very nice. It's a very ununderstood science, and it's generally left that way because if devotees take this and now think, oh, now it's great, just get in the household life and all this and that, and it's all nice, and these are all the rules, that would be completely missing the point. The point is we're trying to get out. It's a matter of using it as a medium to get out, but it means it has to actually be used, not just because we say. Right? Just like devotees say, oh, we chant, we don't care for the rules. Yeah, but that it only came out of his mouth. It didn't actually mean anything. In his life, you don't see that. Right? Because the same person that says, oh, we chant, we don't care for the rules, that person very much cares for their own rules. Right? If they didn't care for any rules, they would say it differently. Right? They would say, oh, it doesn't matter, it's all good, it's all nice, you know, it's... Does that make sense? It doesn't matter what you do. You know, the mood was good, that's what's important. That's a person who, they're not going to judge you on not following the rules, they don't have any rules. But the person who says, oh, we chant Hare Krishna, we don't care for the rules, that person is a hardcore smart in their own right. But in their own very, you know, keyhole area. You understand? Otherwise, why would they mention the rules? If the rules don't matter, why would they mention them? Does that make sense? So that's the point. Like that. Okay? Same thing. Okay. It's not ending. Okay, so question is that if the husband or wife or both are pure devotees, so therefore a service to them, then counted in that category. On one platform, yes, because you are serving the devotees, but then it has to see is what's your motive behind it. Because serving the devotees, then what is the medium that you're using? So then there's a natural medium that you'd use in respecting devotees. Well, here you would be using the medium specifically between husband and wife. Which is not a problem. I'm just saying is we're trying to make distinctions here so someone just doesn't say that, oh, well, you know, I'm just serving their devotees, so therefore... But why are you serving them that way? Do you serve your Guru Maharaj in that way? He's a devotee. You know? No, you don't. You have a different, you know, idea of what that means. It doesn't matter if you are... if this consciousness is there, but it actually has to be there. Means, in other words, if it's not there, then you have to know what you're doing for it to be part of the process. What I'm meaning is, because you've recognized it, that's good. That's a first step, but that's not enough. That's the first step only. It doesn't actually become dynamic until you take that knowledge and consciously try to apply it. And the more you're trying to apply it at every moment, then it actually gives benefit. Otherwise, then it won't. Because if it's just lip service, that it's a bona fide lip service, that's nice. But the thing is it doesn't, it won't give any effect. You know, the example is given like the teats on the neck of the goat, you know. They don't give milk like that. So, Yes, it's tricky. So the whole point is one has to always be conscious and sincerely be trying. So sincerity then is described as that proper endeavor with intelligence in trying to please the Lord. Rupa Goswami says enthusiasm is endeavor with intelligence. The two are combined. Just intelligence isn't enough. Just endeavor is not enough. So the two of them there. So he's saying enthusiasm in Krishna consciousness is this. Right? So some it's just understanding it, some it's just doing it. No, but it's the combination. That's what makes the Goswamis different. That's what makes them special. Because by endeavoring with intelligence, that removes all the obstacles. Then one does become Goswami. Like that. Is that okay? Yeah? Okay. Yes, sir. When we preach, we deal with a variety of people, yeah. Technically, there's only one. There aren't two. There's only one. The other one is actually speculative. Because when we say we bridge to Krishna consciousness, what's the bridge made out of? You know what I'm saying? So that's the problem. If the bridge itself is not Krishna consciousness, how are you going to connect? Because there's nothing mundane that can give you Krishna consciousness. Right? So, therefore, any bridge itself is Krishna consciousness. That's the meaning of adhoksaja. Adhoksaja descends into the material so that we can be in contact with Him and experience Him through the proper performance of our activities. And the Vedic, the activities spread every aspect of human interest and need. So that means that all these bridges that we would use, those bridges should be from Krishna consciousness and delivering Krishna consciousness. Then it actually becomes a bridge. But instead of just being, because generally what we do is we take Krishna consciousness, the definition means philosophy. Because in here the philosophy doesn't mean culture. I mean, here the definition doesn't mean culture, because devotees don't follow that. Right? And then the bridge may be, we'll take it as, let's say we want to do more modern preaching, so therefore, for an example, we'll use New Age. But where is New Age from? Where did astronomy and astrology and palmistry and, you know, all these things come from? Right? Did they come from under a rock? You know, as you know, there was a rock there at Stonehenge and they picked it up and then that's where it was, or you know what I'm saying? It came from the Vedas. So therefore, in the Vedic concept, the aparavidya means, paravidya means transcendental knowledge. Aparavidya means that knowledge which is inherently connectable to the transcendence and useful in the culture of Krishna consciousness. But that same knowledge, of course can be used not in connection with Krishna consciousness. It's called avidya or ignorance. So then consciousness, is not Krishna conscious. And the only difference is you see a connection to Krishna, it's Krishna conscious. You don't see it, it's not. So there's no bridge. That's why I'm saying there's actually only one position. The other one is actually not complete in its understanding. You know, it's not like, well, let me study some astrology, then I can make the bridge. No. If that means you're studying the astrology, then for you it becomes an obstacle. It's not necessarily a bridge for them. Because where are you going to make the bridge? At some time you have to say about Krishna. So then what happens is, basically you're around them enough, they know you enough, they want to know what you're doing, and then somehow or another there's an opening to talk about Krishna, you talk about it. But you didn't technically, according to your method, bridge the gap. It just, by Krishna's grace and by association, the opportunity came up. So you could have bridged the gap just by small talk. You know, how are you? That's what Prabhupada did when he was, so it's that one famous discussion with Graham Hill. Right? He was at the time in the 60s the top Formula One racer in the world. So somehow the devotees, I guess, knew him or something like this, and they arranged a meeting. Prabhupada met him. For 20 minutes, Prabhupada just talked about cars. Yeah, how he had this, you know, old, because before, you know, there was, you know, India was Commonwealth, so all the British cars were in India. So he had some old classic English car. And he started talking about that car. And they got into a nice rapport and all that, you know. And then when the mood was nice and all that, then he brought it into, you know, you were racing cars. And so then, you know, when you're in dangerous situations, do you become afraid? Don't you become afraid? You know? High-speed corners and different... Don't you become afraid? He said, yes. And so do you turn to God? You know, what do you do? What's your solution? I mean, what can you do? No one can help you there. So he brings it to God. And then from God, then he takes it in. He started with cars. So there's no need to, you know, new age. Or you can just talk anything. Everybody's got something. You know, the guy's got a bag. You know, where'd he get his bag from? Hey, cool shoes. Where'd you get those? You know, like that, you know. Hey, I like your hair, you know. Where'd you get that done, you know? You know, I'm just saying, you know what I'm saying? So you could use anything. So it's not that, okay, then we need to study this new age stuff to use as a tool. We can. But what I'm saying is if you don't understand that knowledge in connection to Krishna, it still won't work as a bridge for you. It'll just be something to use as a conversation piece till the other person becomes relaxed enough that an opportunity may arise by, you know, fricks of fate, and therefore you're able to put through the Krishna consciousness. But it's not exactly that you got the credit for that. Krishna arranged it. You get the credit is, you know, okay, let's say you take astrology, but you know astrology, how it functions in Krishna consciousness, what metaphysically in it is working. Otherwise, it's a knowledge, okay, you can just talk it, but then it's still just a conversation piece. But that's different. Then bridge means a conversation piece that has absolutely nothing to do with anything, but it's a common point of discussion. But it's not actually technically a bridge. It's just something to create a relationship with the person. But that could have been anything. An icebreaker, yeah. But it may be a very good icebreaker. But it works, right? You know, like I said, you had that book of all those, you know, things that you could break conversations and open a conversation or, you know, open a speech or stuff like that. So there's things that you can use that just work. They work on human nature. So it becomes that. That then would be the bridge. But it wouldn't have anything more glorious than that. But Krishna consciousness affords all the 14 branches of Vedic knowledge is all the knowledge there is. So you know one of them or some of them, but you know technically how they work and how that technicalities connect to Krishna. That means at any point you can go in that and it can explain that connected to Krishna. You know? That, in other words, it's like they're at the yoga studio. And so then, okay, then we, you know, talk about some yoga or something like that. Yeah, you know, I went to Shivananda's also, and we did this, you know, what ashrams you do, and something like that. You can get like that. The other thing is that, okay, they're there at the yoga studio. That means then you're taking up yoga. That means you understand that there's something important that's higher. Otherwise, why you wouldn't be doing aerobics or something else? There's something that this exercise is more in harmony with yourself. It gives opportunity for understanding higher principles of the self. Right? Right there, they'll agree with that, and you're already in the door. You've already opened the door to talking about connecting with the self, the Vedic knowledge, everything, because we've used that knowledge from our platform. But devotees tend to keep philosophy as philosophy only. And Krishna consciousness doesn't include the Vedic culture, which is simply the manifestation of that philosophy. Right? I am servant. So Brahman serves the community through his knowledge, Kshatriya through protection, Vaishya through economic development, Shudra through service. Right? Like that. So that's the manifestation of this. The perfection of, that's why it always says, the perfection or the ultimate goal is Krishna conscious. Because the others, the Vedic is perfectly in line with the philosophy. But if it is not in connection with Krishna, it's not completely perfect. You know what I'm saying? It means you're following all the rules of the spiritual world by performing your varnashram duties perfectly. But you've missed the point of the consciousness. But otherwise, as far as activity and everything, the philosophy, Krishna's God, that's why you're following, because he's the authority. He said this is the way it goes. Does that make some sense? So it's a slight difference in the approach. Is that what is yoga? Why is it there? Why are people doing it? Or you just say, oh, the yoga. But then it's like, what about the person who's doing the yoga? Forget the yoga. Just go to the person. You're doing this. That means you're looking for something more. You're looking for something. And very few people are looking. But what is it that you're looking for? Well, I'm looking for this. You know, they'll have some idea. And then, so how are you planning to get that? You know, so you can just go right into their own thing and you're standing on their side of it. So there is no bridge. It's simply taking what they have and touching it to Krishna. And then they're already there. You know, it's like the example of the material ocean. It's unlimited. You can't get, not unlimited, shoreless. You can't get across it. But by getting the mercy of the spiritual master, it's reduced down to the size of a calf's hoofprint. And so that boat that is here that can take you to the other side, you're automatically on the other side because it's been reduced to the size of a calf's hoofprint. And the boat doesn't have to go across the river. Across the ocean. It stays right where it is. Because that other bank comes to this bank. So in the same way as you just take whatever it is that you want, and with that, just touch that to Krishna, and right there it's already been bridged, you're already talking Krishna consciousness, you just may be covering the words, but the Shastras do that. Jiva Goswami says that's standard, that's why it's called Rahasya. So therefore these terminologies, karma, jnana, Brahman, all these things, are Paramatma, these are used, they're coverings, so that it makes it more palatable to explaining it to the conditioned nature of the individual that you're dealing with. Like that. So that's standard. We cover the knowledge. But it's still the potency of it still flowing. It's just that you don't leave any things that their conditioned nature might catch on to and therefore throw out. Right? This like Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Krishna Samhita. He gives all kinds of nice ways to divert the attention away from points that aren't important to talk about. And the thing is they are actually in line with our philosophy. They're just using hidden terminology. Right? An example given that these modern Indians, we're talking 1860s, right? Modern Indians then had this mentality, all this Vedic stuff, and it's all just, imagination and all this kind of thing, about all these kinds of hells and this and that and so many things. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur opens his lecture with, the Vedic literature, not Vedic, but we're talking about hell, it's imaginary. Right? And then everybody goes, oh, now here's a progressive Indian. And then he just gets straight into Krishna consciousness. He's gotten over their issues. But he hasn't gone against their philosophy. It's different from, you know, trying to, well, be politically correct. No. Because the point is when you go to hell, you go in your subtle body, which is made out of mind. So whatever you're going through technically is imagination, but it's happening to your body. If you say it's only happening in the mind, you call it imagination. You can. That's one synonym. So he just used the synonym. So he didn't go against their philosophy. So that is not being politically correct. That was just using the rahasya aspect on that to get past something that someone has an issue with, to get to a point that they don't have an issue with, that you can then illuminate with Krishna consciousness. So that's why he says that book is for the madhyamas to understand. You know, because otherwise he says books are written for the uttamas or for the neophytes. He says this one book is written straight for the madhyamas to understand what is the technique of crashing through the conditioned nature that will get in the way of them understanding Krishna consciousness. So that's what those are. But some read them and they get completely bewildered from Krishna consciousness, because then they think it's some kind of a compromise. We never compromise. We just find that point that is common that you can base the relationship on and that we can discuss Krishna consciousness in. And if you don't know it immediately, discuss, it's just general topics, being pleasant, being nice, the art of conversation, like that. That's one of the 64 arts. Just how to have a conversation. Like I remember one devotee was telling me, he was meeting with, I can't remember who it was. It was one of the top religious, I think it was the top religious leader in the country and his family. And some of the devotees, through some family connection, had a connection to him. So devotee was there and, you know, they're having their meal. And the grandmother was there. So she's kind of like, you know, the head of seeing that all the social things go proper in the family. So all the, you know, the guests are there and the family's there, and you know, naturally the thing is you try to, you know, that the guest would talk, because it's, you know, the guest is the person who's come, so therefore it's about them. So if they have something to talk about, then you listen. Then if the guest has nothing to talk about and no one else does, then the grandmother immediately just steps in and just picks up without a moment's loss in the conversation. She picks up and starts talking and moving it around until someone else then takes it, and then immediately she steps back. So it's the art of conversation, just knowing when to talk, when to listen, like that. And so doing that, then you'll start to get something. You'll find that is, you know, an opening. Then in that opening, you just take that and illuminate it with Krishna consciousness, either directly or indirectly. But immediately you're already working with, you know, higher knowledge, upliftment of the living entity, the soul, as more important than the body. Because you can talk these things, especially in the New Age. It's just common. It's all, you know, like that. I was talking, you know, to some old lady the other day, Carmi, like that, and she just said, oh, but you must all believe in this. You know, she was talking about karma. You know, so you'll believe that, you know, this and next life and that and so many things like that. So they know these things. So you can use them as methods to go through and talk. And does that make sense? In other words, if the bridge is not Krishna conscious, it's not a bridge. We may call it a bridge, but it's not actually. It was just, you just have the conversation, then you find something, then you connect it to Krishna. But if you're using Krishna consciousness, then you can actually say it's a bridge, because it's Krishna consciousness that can bridge. Krishna consciousness, Krishna enters into the material world, but the material world never enters the spiritual. So there's no material bridge to get the spiritual, but the spiritual can make that bridge into the material. That's what I mean. In other words, the process descends, it doesn't ascend. And then that makes the difference between a preacher like Prabhupada, who can talk to anybody in that, and then someone who is good in a certain field, and they can talk to that kind of people, and that's it, because they know those tricks and those languages, and the fragrance of it doesn't smell Krishna conscious. You know, they're communications people. They're good at the communications. But when they're not out there with those communications people, they still look like a communications people. You know what I'm saying? ISKCON Communications, you can spot them a mile off because they look like one. They don't look like devotees. They just don't. So therefore they're successful in making meetings and everyone patting each other on the back and okay, then you're not so bad, so you know, we'll drop the you guys a bogus case against you. But you don't bridge beyond that because they're working in their world and their world won't bridge to ours. But if you go in on what is religion, what is human need, what is, you know, morality, dharma, that you could talk to anyone. And they would be impressed. We have something to teach them. Even their top theologians, their top religionists, we could teach them. They don't think like this. And this kind of thought would make them, they would be impressed. If there's someone sincere, they're a real theologian, they would want to know about this. They're a real priest and are concerned about their community, they would be interested in this. If they're ritualistic, and because of this, then they consider themselves superior, and it's a social status, very hard to get through. Because that's not as sincere. But if they're actually sincere, then it would be very easy to get through. That's why we make a distinction between the innocent and the demons. We don't waste our time in the demons. Life's too short. So you find the innocent, and then deal with them. Is that okay? Is that kind of... a slightly different perspective. It's the same thing. In other words, the principle of trying to bridge the gap by looking at these things is very good. But we don't have to leave our own heritage to do it. Because anything else other than Vedic is a derivative of Vedic, not the other way around. They don't have more than us, we have more than them. Therefore, within our own, doing everything is our own, we could do. It means like, just like an example, you have the Catholic person who is their new age, the person who interfaces. When they come to the programs, they dress as a priest. Right? If in their order, they dress in a certain way, they dress that way. If they don't have it, you just dress as a local gentleman, then they come like that. The nuns at the conference come as nuns. Right? When the Dalai Lama comes to one of these conferences, he comes as the Dalai Lama, and all his chelas come that way also. We're the only ones that make the adjustments. Right? Or if they have someone who's just speaking on their behalf, they're not a practicing priest or that. They are a well-wisher or someone of the faith. But they are. I'm a PR man. That's all. I can represent up to a point. I can make arrangements for us getting together and this. Hearing the philosophy, it's these guys. But our devotees want to do both. You don't dress like one. At the same time, we won't talk like one. But we claim we're the only one that can do it. But then Prabhupada was the best at it. Like that. He was the best. Is that okay? Yeah? Kind of. Time, okay. No. I understand. I'm just saying it's one of those. There's a lot of detail there. A lot of detail. But my point is that concept of trying to work, broaden our scope of how we preach, I think that's very, very important. Because right now it's like if it's not, you know, early 1970s or late 60s philosophy and that's it, then it's bogus. And therefore, people are going to other people than devotees to get answers. They don't give very good answers. Like the other day mentioned that we had a film crew here. They were doing a documentary on Buddha. So in their own country where they were from, they went to, you know, the top Buddhist in the country and was interfaced in this and the philosophy, this, that. Somehow or another, because that company had worked, the film company had worked before with a particular devotee, because it wasn't making much sense what the Buddhist was saying. So then they asked the devotee. The devotee explained the Buddhism even better than the Buddhist. Right? And so therefore then they did the documentary with that devotee. You know, so the devotees did everything. Is we can explain it better. And that's the thing, is that those who have come in contact with this, the karmis, they know it. But the problem is we're unwilling to expand it broader than our little box of what we call Krishna consciousness. Because Krishna consciousness is the whole package. You know? And it's just a matter of having the interest and doing, because everything's there. Prabhupada talks about everything. Someone wants to talk about sex. Hey, we got it right here. This chapter is all about sex. You just have to know what you're dealing with. So, yeah. Is that okay? So, the idea is very, very good. But it's just a matter of understanding, putting it into our own language, the approach into our own language will be what the devotees will be more satisfied, and those that you preach to will be more satisfied. They'll get more substance from it, because then it's not a bridge, it's actually you with your lifestyle are coming and contacting them, and that you can contact them means that they could get some benefit from you, right? Like one person asked on the train in New York, you know, because you don't see the devotees out so much. So they didn't even know the devotees are still around, right? So the person came up, and you're on there, and we're chanting, and we're with another devotee, and we're smiling, and, you know, seemed to be quite happy, a little bit. Not the normal, you know, how you say, visage of a normal New Yorker, right? So the person came up and said, "Are you doing something that I could do so I could be happy like you?" Direct. Right? New Yorkers, of course. But the point is they wanted to know it's something to do. But the problem is the way we present ourselves, who wants to wear a baggy t-shirt and, you know, a sloppily put on, you know, gypsy dress? Right? Go back 30 years, hey, that would have been high fashion. But today, who wants to wear it? Right? You want to wear something conservative? Hey, there's all kinds of nice conservative stuff out there. You come wearing that, then they'll think, okay, here's someone who looks good and has got some philosophy. You know, and they're happy. It seems to work. Right? But we won't dress as ourselves and we won't dress as them. And so that's why it's not working, because right now we're the bridge. So we're neither in their world or in our world. And it doesn't work. No one's interested. Right? In Alachua, down at the local supermarket there, the guys that work there know when a devotee walks in, and they're not walking in devotional clothes. It's obvious. So they think, oh, we're just fitting in. Never fitting in. Right? The nun, if she goes to the same shop, she doesn't try to fit in. She comes in her habit. And they deal with her as a nun. So what's the problem? Right? There's 1,500 Hare Krishnas living there. There's probably more of us than them. So who's to fit in? Right? You know, they should be fitting in with us, you know? Like that, you know? So therefore then, you know, what's the problem? You know, we're devotees. Yeah, so what? You know, they got problem. There's 1,500 of us. You want to make a comment? How many friends you got? You know? So I think even the toughest guy would, you know, find it not worthwhile bothering the devotees. Does that make sense? Because otherwise this one has to be careful that one's concept of bridge actually does the job. In other words, if it does it, great. But if it doesn't do it, then it's not. Yeah, it doesn't burn the bridge. Yeah. So it's just, so it's very important, even the approach to how it's done. Because we have it, we have everything ourselves. That's the thing, is that when Prabhupada says everything's in his books, it is. And if there's something you have to get from somewhere else, he says. Just like Jiva Goswami, in his grammar, everything about grammar, about language to communicate is there. And if there's anything that's specialized that he doesn't need to get into the detail of, that's based on these same principles. Like, he's established all the principles and all the main useful details, but any extended details from that are still based on the same principles he gives, then he tells you where to go. He tells you. If you want to know more on Vedic grammar in this area, you go to Panini. Like that. He says it. So Prabhupada says in his book, so you want more detail on this, you go there. He says, if, you know, the leadership, you know, for this, you go to the Arthashastra, you go to Manu. He says, so it's there, but it's still based on the principles that Prabhupada has given. Then looking at the details that are given there, then it will work. But if you go there and then get distracted and keep it as its own complete thing, right? You know, is he a devotee or is he an astrologer? Right? Like, what's the difference? Let's say you go into one of our Indian temples, right? And you meet one of the big life members. Right? And how does he behave? Like a life member. And he's maybe a big businessman. But let us say you go to Chopati. And you have someone there who is equally as big, if not bigger, as, you know, an industrialist or whatever it is. And they're there in the temple. What do they act like? Devotee. So that's the point. Is you know the subject, but you're a devotee. It's very different than you know the subject and you're an astrologer, or you're an Ayurvedic doctor, or you're this or you're that. That's the thing, is like Hanuman. You don't know that he knows all these because he's just a servant of Ram. But he's expert in all these fields. Arjuna, he's expert enough to teach music and dance to King Virat's daughter. And they're not small kings. Right? They're not uncultured like that. So that means he would have to be very good to do that. But do we think of Arjuna as a singer and a dancer? No. Just like Prabhupada. Do we think of him as a cook? Do we think of him as a musician? Right? Do we think of him as a writer? You know what I'm saying? No, you just think of him as a devotee. You know, you don't think of him as an orator. You don't think of him as an organizer, a manager, an administrator. You don't think of him as an economist. He was expert in all these fields. Like that. You don't think of him as a Sanskritist. But he knows Sanskrit. Our devotees don't know. So many times the devotees can't figure out how to translate things. He translated Ishupanishad, that's Vedic Sanskrit. Devotees don't know Vedic Sanskrit. They know classical Sanskrit. So he knew that. That means to know Vedic means you have to know the classical and more. Like that. You know, and Prabhupada could define things. He'll say in the Nirukta it says this. Right? Nirukta. That's Yaska, no? Nirukta is Yaska. Yeah, I know, but I said it's by Yaska. Yaska. Whatever. Okay. It's a very small dictionary. It doesn't work like the dictionaries we have. It has the word and then the definition. It's how the root, the path, the word takes from a root to its final stage. So it's very, very small and condensed. So if Prabhupada is quoting Nirukta, means you have to know Sanskrit to be able to use it. Right? Amar Kosh, that's definitions. with that. Does that make sense? But you don't think of Prabhupada like that. You just think of him as the best devotee. So that's the whole point, is a devotee who's expert in these fields, but you don't think of him as that, then that's better. That will be able to get across to the other person, because then you are a person. Right? A person can relate to another person. A person can get another person to practice what you do. So that makes it very, very strong. Well, if you're an expert, that's nice. That's good. But better to be a master. Because the master actually knows why it works. So in the Vedic, you can be a master of all the subjects because you know Krishna consciousness. Though technically you may not be able to do, but you know how it functions. Like that. Does that make sense? That way then you can go to any of these new age things and talk to anybody and they'll all be very happy. Like that. Because if they want to talk astrology or they want to talk, you know, Ouija boards, there's plenty of people to talk to. If you want to know why that Ouija board works, that no one can tell you. You know? That they don't know. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yes, maybe last point, then we'll send. Yeah. How only the devotees? You want to know why they don't do it. But they don't know that. They don't know their spirit souls. I'm just saying, so therefore it's for good. Means what we're talking, you have to be able to distinguish between conscious and unconscious. Right? So unconscious selfishness is not really counted. It's only discussed in relationship to the individual improving themselves. Because only you can tell. So it's ways to give keys for that. So those kind of conversations are to understand that. It means here is consciously then, you know, they're trying to do good for others and working very hard and will sacrifice their life and all. And so it's very glorious. But if you understand the soul and you actually understand duties, then you would know whether you should be sacrificing your life, what you should be doing, what do they actually need. You know what I'm saying? You have the person and he's murdered somebody and he's put up for execution and you're you know out there fighting to abolish, you know, capital punishment. But is that actually beneficial? You know? More important, you really wanted to help these people, why don't you go out there and work in places where you can work with these people and try to uplift them to get them out of their criminal mentality. Or go even before that into the situations so that people don't become criminals. Right? Then you'd say you're doing something more positive. Because otherwise here then they don't actually know who they are, what they're dealing with. So it's noble that they're doing that and they will be rewarded for that. You know, but at the same time as we're talking about the ultimate and going back to Godhead. So these things, though they apply to some degree, have their limitation because then there's a higher principle that take that, that overrides that one. So in other words, the pranamoy will always override anamoy. So someone situated there is better situated. They are a better person. But someone situated in manamoy is better situated than the pranamoy. But the good qualities of the pranamoy are still good because they're actually subdivisions of the manamoy. Does that make sense? In other words, bhakti is the real standard. Right? And so in that, you are engaging the senses in the Lord's service. You're trying to get results for Him. You're trying to act in a way that's pleasing to Him in what is natural and what does please Him. You're trying to do it in a way that you have nothing to gain from it. Right? We would say that that would be devotional service unmotivated by karma and jnana. So what did we just list? Dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Right? Does that make sense? We say engaging our senses, that's anamoy. Right? Does that make sense? We're doing it not for ourselves, for the other person, because that's the way it should be. Not that I'm doing it for them and I'm going to get something back. The pranamoys get something back. Vijnanamoy, you're not getting anything back. Not from the fruit of element of it. Yeah. It's right, but it's also the fruit of the result may come, but it's not yours. Right? To the pranamoyist that they gave in charity, you know, and helped this, you know, orphan's home, and then on Christmas they go there and hold a party for them, and then everybody, all the kids are happy, and all the, you know, people that run the orphanage are very happy, and it comes out in the newspaper and the local editorials, they're happy. Who got the profit? The donor. You know what I'm saying? And no one will complain. Well, why you shouldn't get? So therefore, it is a subtle, it's a subtle, fruitive activity. Right? The sensual is an obvious, grosser, fruitive activity. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is one can be performing an activity of one platform, but one's consciousness can be in the other. One could be doing one's religious duties for the purpose of sense gratification or liberation. Right? Does that make sense? The devotees are just as vulnerable, but at the same time as the devotees have the method to become completely free from it, while the non-devotees don't. They can free themselves to a point like that. They're much more vulnerable. The power of devotional service is so much more powerful. But for what effort is going in, the result is so much greater. You know what I'm saying? Is that the impersonalist is doing so much austerity and therefore getting some benefit. The devotee is doing very little activity like that in that way of austerity, but doing service to Krishna, and they're getting so much more benefit. Is that okay? Okay. So I think we'll end here. Like that, it's getting late. Shaho Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi.